afternoon. This is Reverend Blake Ruby. Welcome to my show, The Church of the Soul's Evolution. I've had my show, although it's had different names, for about 8 years now. Back in 2017, I began my shows. At first, it was twice a month and then once every week. And I talk about spirituality. If you've heard me before, I'm all about improving our spirituality here on Earth. We need it. That's why we're here on planet Earth. Out of many different planets in our universe, of course, there are a lot of planets in our solar system, but there are also a lot of planets in neighboring solar systems in our Milky Way galaxy, and of course, a lot of other solar systems out there in other galaxies, right? And as we get smarter and more intelligent, then we realize that we're not alone in the universe. We never have been alone, just like they say in Ancient Aliens. Besides, if you're an atheist, you might say, well, I recognize that there is life here on Earth. Over 1 million types of insects, over 30,000 types of fish, over 10,000 types of reptiles, over 10,000 types of birds, over 9,000 types of amphibians, over 5,000 types of mammals. And if all that life here on planet Earth happened by accident, logically, it could happen by accident in any one of those other planets out there. And you know, they're discovering more and more each day. The Kepler Space Telescope, the James Webb Space Telescope, right? I think they've discovered like 1,000 already, at least. And about 300 or 400 solar systems. Actually, when you look up in the evening sky and you see the stars up there, which are actually suns, if you get a telescope, a really good telescope, maybe, you know, 200 power, zoom in on one of those stars, you'll see it looks like a horseshoe. And the sun's in the middle and other planets revolve around it. Now, usually, each solar system has 9 planets. They might lose a planet here or there or gain a planet here and there, but ultimately they revert back to the number 9, which is the number of the universe. I've learned that from many sources without directly quoting any to you. But besides spirituality, I'm just an average guy living my life here in San Antonio, trying to make ends meet, you know, staying alive each and every day. And indeed, every day is a gift, a blessing. The sun has gone down here. You know, the clock went back an hour. And now it gets dark by around 6 o'clock before the sun was setting. And maybe about a month ago, it was above the trees behind my backyard at around 6 o'clock. So I was telling Doug just before the show began that I've got some issues going on in my life. Like we all do. Sometimes I realize that my problems aren't as bad as some other people's, but we all have struggles. Planet Earth is meant to be a difficult school of learning. In the University of the Universe, it's one of the most difficult. So every day that you survive here on planet Earth, give yourself a pat on the back. You should be proud to have survived another day. Indeed, this is not our home, my friends. This is a planet. With all that life I mentioned, there's a food chain, and we're not at the top of the food chain, right? And besides that, Mother Nature can be very fierce, right? You know that. Hurricanes and tornadoes and lightning and tsunamis and earthquakes and volcanoes exploding and wildfires. And not to mention, you get on the freeway, you take your life in your hand, there's risk out there. 50,000 plus people die each year on the roads here in the United States. In fact, around the world, 40,000 people a day die. Around the world, 40,000, my friends. Remember that song, Don't Fear the Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult? In that song, it talks about 40,000 people. Don't fear the Reaper because people are dying all the time. Does that make sense? Dying is like a transition to another side, to another dimension, kind of like jumping in water and then you're in the underwater dimension, you know. If you were a scuba diver, go down underneath the surface of the water, you're in that underwater dimension, and it's kind of like that. But me personally, I don't want to die. I enjoy each day. I can learn new things. But let me tell you about some of the issues I've been going through. I'm going to take a drink. You might have heard me talk about it before. I've been living in my house here since September of 2010. It's not a fancy house. It's adequate. It's got 3 bedrooms, 2.5 bathrooms, a 2-story house. And I bought the house and moved in by myself. I had my friend Jackie, who I met when I was working at Headquarters Installation Management Command in Crystal City, Virginia, in 2005. In fact, we sat next to each other. She was in the logistics directorate, and I was in the operations directorate. Shortly thereafter, we got to know each other. She was promoted and moved on to the Army Materiel Command at Fort Belvoir. And I kept in touch with her by going to the Army birthday balls in the middle 2000s. 2005, I think, was the first one. Until 2010, we went to 5 consecutive Army birthday balls. The first 2, we didn't go together. We just met up there and we danced the night away. And then we started dating, in quotation marks. And we were good friends. We went to restaurants, we went to movies, we went on walks together. And when I moved down here, that was the time when the Army was going through a BRAC, base realignment, and my command was moved from Crystal City to Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Joint Base San Antonio, and her command, the Army Materiel Command, moved to Huntsville, Alabama. But she didn't want to go there because she doesn't like Alabama. She's African-American. That was factored into her thinking. But they offered her a job, or getting her a job, in the National Capital Region, which includes the Military District of Washington, Fort Belvoir, Fort Meade, and Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall. So we were on the phone talking, and it was January of 2011, a few months after I'd moved in here. And I asked her if she was going to move here. And she said, well, I'm on the priority placement program, and they're going to try to find me a job in the National Capital Region. And all of a sudden, I realized that I was going to lose my friend. So an idea came to my mind. I said, well, you want to get married? And she said, yes. And so she was supposed to come down here to go to the rodeo in February of 11. And instead, we went to the Justice of the Peace. We got our marriage license, and we got sworn in as husband and wife. And she went back to Alexandria. And then, after closing out there at her work, out processing, etc., in May of 11, she moved here, and we were officially married. We went on a honeymoon. And so in November of 2011, her daughter and grandchildren, 3 of them, her daughter Eva and grandchildren Malik, Malia, and India, moved in with us. Well, from the very beginning, it was kind of contentious. They had been living with her in Crystal City. We were, Jackie and I were in the same apartment complex, the Reserve at Potomac Yard. You know, take a drink. And in 2009, Eva moved in with her. Jackie had not always had a good relationship with Eva. She's got 2 daughters, one who lives in Tokyo, Kathy, and then Eva. And Eva's had problems in the past with holding down a job and with the law and financially. So this was a good opportunity for Jackie to take her in and help her. But Leah was about to be born, and indeed she was born in 2009. And then when I asked Jackie to marry me, she had to kick them out of that apartment, and I don't know where they went, I forget. But they weren't doing well, so Jackie talked me into having them come and live with us. But from the very beginning, they were, how should I best describe it? They were very, very confrontational. They weren't doing their chores, no chores, and they still aren't doing chores, except for Eva. And Malik sometimes helps with the garbage. But Malia and India, they don't hardly do any chores at all. They never contributed to paying for anything. I paid the rent, the bills, utilities, etc., everything. And we would get into arguments about one thing or another. They weren't taking their shoes off inside the house. Finally, I skipped that rule, and now I wear my shoes in the house. And it got to the point where it took a particular encounter between Eva and me. She had the baby Malia in her arms, was in our bedroom talking to my wife one day, and the baby was screaming, and I said, please take the baby out of the room. I don't want to hear her scream. And I asked her like 2, 3, 4 times. Finally, I had to scream, get her out of the room. She came by and said, I'll knock your ass out. Well, I went down shortly after that to the sheriff's, the justice of the peace, actually, and filed a forcible detainer to get her evicted. I went through the process. It was pretty long. It took several months. And then the writ of possession. And finally, the sheriffs had to come and tell her to take her stuff out of the house, put it on the curb, or they would do it for her. So she hopped in a cab with her children, was on her way to the bus station, and that was that. And Jackie and I were by ourselves, I would say, for another year. They went and lived with my wife's sister in Delaware, and of course there were problems there, confrontations, arguments. And they were asked to leave. They went and moved in with my wife's niece, Darian. 6 of them living in a one-bedroom apartment. And so Jackie talked me into allowing them to come here to San Antonio. And we were going to put them in a place called the Haven for Hope in downtown San Antonio. And they were going to help them. I even communicated with them, had a point of contact, and they were going to help Eva to find a job, give her training, and it would look after them and feed them, give them shelter, you know. But they showed up here and they were going to go the next day. When they came in the house, it was like old times, kind of. And I said, well, you know what? You all can stay. And they have stayed over the years. Occasionally, I've had conversations with Eva, kind of yelling matches, and she never got a job until, like, around 2020. I think it was after the pandemic, but she got a job working the election polling stations, which my wife also works, and I just worked recently. All day, 14 hours. It pays not much. I don't really do it for the money, but so Eva was working the early voting 2 weeks, twice a year, and that's the only job. She works, of course, you know, I don't see a penny of that, and that's okay. And I'm helping to support everyone. I'm going to take a drink. I have 3 cars. I paid them off, a 17 Camry, a 16 Camry, a 19 Highlander. The 17 Camry I gave to Malik, my grandson, because he's a fine young man. He really is. And we could talk together. He kind of stays to himself. He works at Amazon full-time as a forklift driver. And Jackie has the Highlander, but she shares it with Eva. Eva uses it to take Malia to school, to sports, And then I've got my Camry, which sometimes I share with my wife when Eva uses the Highlander, which I don't like. But anyway, so I paid them off. But I gave the 17 Camry to Malik, and that was like a $27,000 car back then, now worth about between $10,000 and $14,000. And here in the house, as of the recent past, the dishes pile up in the sink, and it's dirty. We have two dogs. One is a young dog, 2 years old, a German short-haired pointer. He's big and he's strong, and he kind of is out of control because he's hard to give commands to. Goldie, the American Pit Bull Terrier, she's old and on her last, in her last days, so to speak. And she's a wonderful, loving dog, and she sleeps on the bed on and off during the night or may go downstairs. But beginning in June, I got into some complications, and I mentioned it on a previous show. I don't remember when it was, but we sometimes clash about doing things. Eva undoes some of the things I do around the house, which I don't like. I'll throw something away and she'll pick it out of the garbage, that kind of thing. There's lots of clutter all over the place. She's a hoarder and a procrastinator, big time. And the two daughters' bedroom upstairs, if you looked inside, I mean, it would shock anybody. It would shock you, really. The clutter that's in there, piled high to the ceiling, with hardly any room for them to move around. And in the hallway, it's gotten like that. The washer and dryer and the clothes on top, almost all the time. I usually get Eva to do my laundry for me, and I give her $20. I make good money, but I live in kind of squalor, you know. And my wife is supportive of them because we're improving their quality of life. However, these confrontations like the one I was talking about back in June came up, and the granddaughter, Malia, 16 years old, so she's going through that phase in her life. And she's constantly yelling and screaming and slamming doors. And she has the foulest mouth I've ever heard of any person. So now you know what I mean. And I've heard a lot of people. I've been in the Army, and I know how Army people talk. And on the good side, she's a track star at her school, and a soccer star, too. She's strong and fast. But she has a temper, and I got into it with her back in June. I can't remember what it was about. Oh, yeah, that's it. And there's another confrontation I had with her mother. Her mother does something. Like, one time I asked her for the keys for the Highlander, and she ignored me. And I had to move it out on the street because a tow truck was coming to change the tire. And she had the keys. And I asked her for the keys, and she was cleaning the blinds on the window in the front of the house. She ignored me. So finally, I raised my voice, and she backed me up, walked back, reaching into her bra to get the keys, which were in there. I actually saw one of her breasts while she did that, backing up. Finally said, "Stop. Stay where you are. Stop backing me up." She gave me the keys. So my rationale was to get the car moved before the tow truck came so that they'd be ready to change the tire. Her rationale was they could wait until we could wait until they get there, then move the car. I think I was right. Anyway, so another situation back in June, her mother said something, I remember now, it was about Mr. Trump. And this is a common difficulty in families where you have somebody who's a Republican and then someone who's a Democrat. And as you know, there's a lot of competition going on between them, a government shutdown, as a result of the competition, and we the people are suffering a violation of the Constitution, I might add. Am I right? We the people deserve to be governed properly by our politicians who we elect, not held hostage by them and have to suffer from lack of food and money. It's wrong. I'm going to take another drink. I like Mr. Trump very much. I liked him from the beginning, although I voted for Hillary back in 16 because I wanted to see a woman president. But when I saw how they were going after him from the beginning, the Russian collusion, the two impeachments, which I might add make for a case regarding a stolen election, because if they planned it that way, the Russian collusion, the two impeachments, when the House turned blue in 2018, not to mention the mail-in ballots, which was a good strategy on behalf of the Democrats, and indeed they got a lot more mail-in ballots than the Republicans, and that all speaks of a stolen election. That's the way I look at it. But I became a Republican and a fan of Mr. Trump when I saw the difficulties that it was going through. I'm a people person. I'm not really a party person. Subsequently, I had dreams of him. I've had six dreams of Mr. Trump where he's like an older brother in my dreams, and we talk in the dreams, and he's cool. Anyway, I was watching him on television, and Eva coming up behind me saying things about him, you liar, you liar, blah, 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 blah. I said, would you just please be quiet? And so she raised her voice at me, and then Malia came down the stairs. And what are you doing yelling at my mother? Stop yelling at my mother. Well, I got into it with her. I raised my voice. She raised hers. We were screaming. And I don't like losing my temper, but she'd been getting on my nerves for a long time. So then she comes down the stairs, walks out, and says, Blake, I hope you die. Well, after that, the next day, hey, got my show out here. Well, I guess he just let the dog out. Now he's going to bark. Oh, no, hold on just a minute. Well, Malia let the dog out. Try not to let the dog out because he starts barking. He likes to bark in the backyard. So there's an example of how things are going. And anyway, I can hear her yelling in there. She's Doug was saying she might be bipolar. But anyway, so the next day she walks by me and says, I hate you, Blake, or just I hate you. So I'm thinking to myself, we're actually staying in this house with a commitment to see her through high school for the next 2 years. She's a junior, so she's got half more year. We're doing this for her, and she is treating me, I call it elder abuse. I'm 71, she's 16. And the next confrontation I got in with her about, the next confrontation was about putting a box in the window so the dog wouldn't be looking out the window, barking at a car that goes by, barking at a dog that goes by, people walking by. She just slammed the door, and she said her famous words, I don't care, early this morning while we're sleeping, or late at night, it happens all the time, slamming doors, screaming, yelling, swearing. I don't care, she said. I don't care. I don't care. Well, I'm having them evicted again. My wife is very depressed about it because I'm not going to live the rest of my life with her or her mother. Her mother can't control her. And that's the situation we're in. My wife is depressed. She's in bed. She wasn't feeling well today. I'm going to take another drink. I know other people have worse problems than me. And I pray constantly for protection wisdom, strength for all of us. You know, we've got our health, for more or less. My wife, she's doing pretty well until Eva got sick. We worked the polling station last Tuesday, and she had gotten sick after her 2 weeks of the early voting. And Jackie thinks she might have caught a little bug from her. Anyway, so we had gone to court on the 3rd of July after that. I went down and filed a forcible detainer. And we both appeared before the judge. However, my wife was going up to Indiana for a family reunion, and then we were going to Japan in August for 2 weeks. So she talked me into asking the judge to dismiss the case, which he did. Then we went on a cruise in September. I had hired a lawyer just before we went on the cruise to deliver the eviction notice, and I've been trying to do this for a while. I give her the letter, which I'm supposed to do, that's part of the process, and she just throws it away. Anyway, the lawyer put an eviction notice on the door, taped it to the door. She took it off and went and taped it on my pillow. Well, nothing happened. My wife told me to just be patient. Things were going to get better. And so a couple of months had gone by. And then when we got back from the election polling station on Tuesday night, we were both dog tired. Got into bed, and then Malia starts up again, ranting and raving and swearing and slamming doors. And I thought to myself, okay, well, we were going to rent a house, a bigger house, sell this house, rent a house. They would have their own bedroom, 5-bedroom. We talked about it. We were on that path to doing that. I'm going to take a drink. But then after that, I thought about it, and I said, no, I'm going to contact a lawyer again. So I got back with him. I canceled it before because Jackie talked me out of it. But then I asked him to reinstate it. I only had to pay a small fee, and now we're back on track. They delivered the letter yesterday, I think. He told me it was going to be delivered yesterday afternoon, so I'm assuming that it was delivered. I saw something in Eva's hand last night, but she didn't tell me. Anyway, so I've been through this before. An eviction is not a pleasant thing to have to go through. There's a lot of negativity in the atmosphere, so to speak. But I see light at the end of the tunnel with this. Once I get them out of my house, then I can evaluate the health of the house, if you will, you know, what it looks like. And once I get them out so that they can't come back in, then I can throw away what they left behind. I can do that legally. My wife was concerned about doing it that way instead of just asking Eva, she said, to move out so that I could go and possibly move to Nevada and get closer to my son in California. But right away, she said, no, I'm not going to do that. And so we had about a 20-minute argument, and that was Wednesday or Thursday, I forget. And then I realized, well, I'm glad we had this conversation, because now I'm convinced, now I'm more motivated to go through with this. But I'm hoping my wife kind of gets on my side. She's kind of like stuck between a rock and a hard place. I'm going to take a drink. And y'all could pray for me, help make things all right. I really, with Malia, she gets so angry. And I, even though I lost my temper, I kept my cool and was able to speak rationally. But I feel threatened by her, and she actually got into my face. This was like after June in July, the second encounter, bad encounter, where she jumped up on the couch. I mentioned something about being her grandfather, which I am. And she, her face livid with rage, contorted with rage, said, "You were never my grandfather. You never will be my grandfather." I was thinking, oh my God, after all I've done, all the money that I've given her and the family, allowed them to stay in my house, gave a car to my grandson, paying all the bills, the mortgage, everything, and she has the nerve to say that, and Jackie. And she, of course, loves her daughter and grandchildren. I don't have any grandchildren, so I can't actually feel that way. But she said that Malia is going through a stage, a phase, 16. She'll outgrow it. But I was telling Doug before the show began, I do not believe, no way in hell, that, excuse my French, that she will move out, excuse me, that she will get better and stop the yelling, the screaming, the swearing, the slamming doors. The door into her bedroom, she slammed it so much you can hear it's broken. And the bathroom, too. The bathroom door is broken. Anyway, so this is just the beginning. It's just begun. My lawyer says that probably nothing will happen before the holiday season is through, so this is probably going to go into January. And I'll be tempted to forget about it, but I have a dream, and I like my wife with me. I told her, I said, I want you with me. She's my best friend. But I want to get away from them as far away as possible. I know that might not sound very loving, but after all I've been through, and the house is dirty, plates piling up in the sink, you know, I mean, I help out sometimes, but can someone do some chores? The house is dirty. I can't remember when the last time the floor has been mopped or swept and mopped. But I am thankful that everyone has their health, you know, that we don't have anything really bad that has happened, like any violence or, you know, or being involved in a car accident. God, please help us for that not to happen. And so the Reverend Blake Ruby has his own issues and problems that he's dealing with. I tell you the truth. I mention it to you because I'm a real person. I'm not going to hide things that are on my mind. I might tell you that all about heaven and extraterrestrials. I gave a speech today. I'm going to take a drink. A speech about extraterrestrials, about the burden, a race of extraterrestrials. How am I doing on time, by the way? 634. And these extraterrestrials, they travel around the universe. They are the dominant species. I learned about them in the book called The Contact Has Begun. May I recommend it? It's a great book. I picked it up in the 90s when I was visiting my parents. It talks about these extraterrestrials. The author is Philip Kraft, K-R-A-P-F, who worked on the L.A. Times Metro desk for 25 years, received the Pulitzer Prize for the L.A. riots in the early 90s. It's a very interesting read. And he was taken aboard their spaceship, beamed up like a pea through a straw into kind of like an examination room where other human beings were being examined at that time. But the reason they brought him on board was so he could write the book, because he was a, what do they call them? Not a novelist, but a reporter. So he'd written many, helped write many articles for the newspaper, the LA Times, over the years. And so what these extraterrestrials do is that they go around the universe and they charter solar systems that they haven't discovered. And surprisingly, after traveling around the universe for over close to 300 million years, they're still coming up to solar systems that are uncharted. Isn't that amazing? That gives you an idea of just how big the universe is. Now, there was a light that just shined out there in the distance. I see lights in the sky do that sometimes. I don't know if it's an angel or an ET that does it. I mean, these are like someone showing the flashlight just right then. So that might be them. That might be the verdants. And I wouldn't mind going up there and seeing them myself. You know, I know it, that they're so extremely intelligent and evolved. It would be like me talking to a kindergarten person and trying to, you know, boy or girl, and trying to make sense to them, tell them about physics, you know, E equals MC squared. Can you imagine trying to tell a kindergarten child about quantum mechanics and how gravity controls our solar system and space is a fabric? Einstein's theory of special relativity, you know what I mean? You can't tell a kindergarten person that. But these ETs, they have colonized 246,000 planets in our universe, and they are members of the Intergalactic Federation of Sovereign Planets. Altogether, it's about 26,000 members from other planets who are members of the intergalactic community. And what they do is they set up an observation post on a planet of a newly chartered solar system when they've discovered life, like sentient life, and watch them evolve and progress over the years until they take their first steps into outer space. And unless they are peaceful, they will sabotage their attempts, because there are a lot of ferocious, warlike species out there who the virgins have had to keep on their planets, because for them, space is supposed to be a peaceful domain. And it should be. That's why I never liked the Star Wars movies. I don't like the two words Star Wars. Although there are some species out there who are engaged in interstellar war, the majority of beings want to live in harmony and have peace and have love proliferate instead of hate. There's no justification for killing anybody. There never is. Anyway, so Phil Kraft was taken aboard for 3 days and given an indoctrination, orientation, and education on their agenda. They had seen all the violence here on Earth, all the wars that we've had in our past, the killing, millions and millions and millions of people killed in wars, and they knew that they were dealing with a violent species. No one can deny that. However, they saw the good side. I'm going to get another drink here. Hold on for a few seconds, please. They saw the good side of humanity, the artists, the lovers, the musicians, the family-oriented people, the generous, kind people. And they made an exception and decided to go forward with contact so that we could be members of the intergalactic community. And the process was put into place, and the steps were being made. And with an eventual contact date of approximately 2010, a summit where we could get together. But before then, with all the people they would be abducting, the word would go out, the media would eventually report it to the world, and people, they would do it gradually so as not to cause panic, and then take a drink. And they were going to finally, so that no one would have any doubt in their minds, do something so incredible that the people of Earth would know that they're out there and they're real. They were going to change about a 100-acre patch of dry, arid desert land in the American Southwest to a grassy oasis overnight. But guess what happened? 9/11. And then their minds changed about us. After how many people died in 9/11? Over 3,000? They saw that. And they said to themselves, well, these human beings are probably going to destroy themselves. Does that ring a bell? I mean, is anybody concerned about that? You don't think it can happen? You don't think we have the capability to do it? And so, I don't know what the status is right now. Philip was beamed back aboard the spaceship and stood before a couple of high-ranking verdant extraterrestrials, and that's what one of them said. You humans, you're probably going to destroy yourselves. But there is still hope, my friends. Prayer is the key. If we pray for each other, can't you see all the violence going on now? The war in Ukraine and in the Gaza Strip, over 60,000 Palestinian men, women, and children killed in the recent past. The fighting that's going on right now between the Republicans and Democrats. No one's saying one good thing about the other person, about the opposition. That's wrong. But guess what? Everything's going to be all right, I feel. I've said this before, but we have to ensure that it will be, and we can change things by praying for each other. Prayer works. Let me tell you a story about prayer. Please remember this. This is a great example. How your prayers are heard. Every single prayer is heard and acted upon and can change things. God, the Mother and Father God of our solar system, or the creator of the universe who initiated the Big Bang, you can pray to any one of them. You can pray to Jesus or Muhammad if you want, or Buddha. I always pray to the creator of the universe, although I respect my Mother and Father God, who are co-creator gods themselves, and went through the same thing that we're going through now, living on planets throughout the universe until they achieve that level of perfection by going through the process of reincarnation and purifying their souls and evolving their souls until they were at the co-creator God status and able to create their own solar system on a patch of infinite space out there. You better believe it. So here's a great story that you can see on YouTube about a man by the name of Bruce Van Natta, B-A-N-N-A-T-T-A. He was a mechanic for semi-trucks back in the day. I don't know, can't remember where he grew up, but he was a grown man, and he was working at the shop one day, and he was getting close to leaving and going home, when a fellow co-worker asked him to take, he looked at the clock, it was past 6, and he was already a little bit late. And the man realized that, and he said, well, just, you don't have to stay, but just take a look under that semi over there. I think it's leaking oil. So it was running, the engine was running. And he got on the board, went underneath the truck, it was up on some stands. And he saw the leak in the engine, and he yelled to his co-worker, okay, I see it. You can turn the engine off now. But what he didn't know is that the truck had been on those stands for about 3 days, and with the engine on, and when he turned it off, he climbed on board, and you know, they have the pistons that are gas-operated, air shocks. When he got up into the cab and turned it off, the truck slipped from one of the jacks, and he saw it. Bruce saw it in the corner of his eye through his peripheral vision that it was about to come off the jack. And at first, you know, he thought that, well, the man, his coworker had just been underneath there before him, and the truck had been up on the stands for like 3 days, so he didn't see any danger, although there wasn't the safety. They hadn't been following the safety protocol, but, well, just in an instant, he realized it was too late, and then the force of 5 tons of the axle came down in his midsection and squashed him and crunched him all the way to the bone, hitting against the concrete underneath his backbone, almost like down to an inch, 5 tons of an axle. And he said, at that time, he said, "Lord, help me, please." And then he said it again, "Lord, help me, please." And he was able to yell to his friend and his co-worker, and he got the jack put into place and lifted up the truck. And, yeah, oh, Goldie's coming out. Okay, the dog, when the dog's about to come out. Okay, thank you. So one of the dogs is about to come out. But the co-worker realized that he had a back injury, which was more than that. He said he looked down at, he looked like a cartoonish kind of figure. You see with some cartoons where they have like a square. So he said it looked kind of cartoonish, but all his insides, his intestines, was squished down to the backbone. And his co-worker wouldn't pull him out because he had that back injury. And then he said he heard his heart going from, well, he pulled himself out. I forgot. I'm sorry. He was able to pull himself out, but then he heard his heart stop beating. It went from like, dun, 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 dun. And when it came down and stopped to the end and stopped beating, he lifted up above his body, about 20 feet above his body towards the ceiling, was looking down. At first, he didn't recognize himself. But then he saw a couple of angels, huge angels that were administering to him. Hold on, please. He said that they were maybe 8-9 feet tall and had long, long hair down to their waist, and they had robes on. One of them, they were both putting their hands over the area where he was, he had been injured. And then they called the paramedics, 911, and this was in a rural area, and they didn't have what you would call a proper fire station. They were all volunteers. But they came in two different groups. And some came in through the front door, and two of them came in through the back door. And one of them said, "He's gone." They tried to revive him. They couldn't do chest compressions because he'd been so badly injured. And so they thought he was dead. In the meantime, I'm trying to make a long story short here. Bruce started to go down a tunnel towards a light in the distance, like maybe 90 million miles away, that far. And then one of the firefighters that came in through the back door was a female, and she had her own unique path that helped them, ultimately turned out to help them in a very coincidental way. But without getting into that, she was slapping him in the face lightly and saying, "Bruce, come back, come back." And then when he was going down the tunnel, he heard that, and next thing he knew, he was back in his body. But then he thought to himself, "No, this is too much pain. I can't handle it." And he went back up to the ceiling, looking down, and now he recognized his body. And so then he went down the tunnel again, and one more time the woman was slapping his face lightly and saying, "Bruce, come back." So he came back one more time, and he thought to himself, "Now I really can't do this. It's too much pain." And then for the third time, he went back up to the ceiling and started going through the tunnel again. And finally, one more time, he heard her say, "Bruce, Von Atta, come back." And he realized again that was him. And he was back in his body, and he heard a voice say to him, and he thought it was God, say, "If you want to survive, you're going to have to fight harder than you've ever fought in your life." And when he came back, he looked into the eyes of that paramedic, the firefighter, the woman, and she said, "Bruce, what do you have to live for? You're on the verge of life and death. Do you have a family?" And so he survived. And after many surgeries, he recovered almost completely to where he's almost normal. But my point is, those two prayers that he prayed while he was under the truck when that 5-ton axle crushed his midsection were, "Lord, help me." This is very simple, two very simple prayers. He said it twice. He said he doesn't know why he said it twice, but he said it twice. So that proves that your prayers are being heard. Also, a very interesting thing, when he did recover about a year later, he went to thank those firefighters for helping to save him. And he was able to go around and identify each one of them. And the people that came in the back door, he said, "You all came in through the back door." And they said, they had to think about it a little bit. And then they said, "Yes, how did you know that?" "Because I saw you." And they said, "Oh, yes, well, we came into the back because we overshot the driveway and came in around the other side." And he was able to identify them, those two individuals that came in, including the woman that helped save him. So that proves that the spirit of Bruce Von Atta was up in the ceiling, was able to see everything and identify each and every person, their facial characteristics. But more importantly, like I was saying, prayers work, my friends. All you have to do is speak the words into existence. Now, you might not get what you want. You might not get what you need, but keep praying. Help make the world a better place by saying a prayer. It could be something simple like this. Creator of the universe, you are omnipotent and omniscient. We love you. You're like an aurora borealis out there, with all the colors of the rainbow and a gigantic head inside, like in The Wizard of Oz, with lightning and fire all around. But you know what, Creator? You're really cool. And you're the best friend we could ever possibly have. You know everything. You know the number of hairs we have on our head. You know the number of grains of sand on every beach on this planet. You know everything. Please, help me. Help our family. Help my wife, Jackie, to get through this. Help us to move closer to my son. I don't wish Eva and Malia any problems. I don't wish them any harm. I just know that I want to live the rest of my life with my wife and only my wife. And they should become self-sufficient, be on their own, and learn to support themselves. Could you please help us with that, Creator? Please make it happen. If that could be your will, I know everything has to be your will, but I don't see how listening to Malia day after day for the rest of my life, go through her temper tantrums as part of your will. I just don't believe that, Creator. But if it is, I will. I'll do what you want. But Creator, there's so many good people in this world, and we know that the majority of them are decent, family-oriented, loving, kind people. Bless them, but also bless the bad, the dictators, the bullies, the tyrants, that small percentage who probably have more money than ever. Everyone else, and might be just leading us to the slaughterhouse, so to speak, but I hope not, because we deserve to be raised up. We deserve to be saved, Creator. I've seen those good people, so many good people. Don't let us destroy ourselves, please, Creator. You can do anything. You are able. You are so able. And we thank you for everything, all your help, for the miracles of all creation, the beauty of this planet, this jewel of the universe. I've gotten to know you, Creator, over the last few months, ever since I watched that video from Donna Rebado, R-E-B-A-D-O-W, and when she drowned, and you let her see you, and you talk with her. And that's something we all can do, Creator, is have a conversation with you, and know that this is a wonderful thing that's going on, that we're all a part of. We're like in a simulation, and living in a manufactured universe, we are spirit in the material world. I've got 1 minute, my friends. So say your prayers, too. Say your prayers, my friends, please. They work. Take it from me. I guarantee it. Your prayers are heard. They are really heard. You must believe it. That's it. Thank you for listening to my show. I'll talk with you next week. I love you. Take care. Bye-bye.